Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Well, Frontline is camping
with Frontline.
Frontline, by the way, has outstanding productions.
Geography Frontline.
Hello everybody, how is it going? We're back for episode 109 of Geography Frontline. Last week wasn't so successful regarding to feedback, and I see the numbers of listeners rise, but the feedback, we really have to get this going again. But anyways, let's start off with the first topic of today's show. To be honest, it's the only topic we have today, and this is underground economy. I was reading an interesting article this morning on CNN on the website titled The Jobless Economy. And this deals with the question of labor in today's times of crisis. I'm reading a little from the page. As improvements in computers, robotic technologies, and other forms of job automation continue to accelerate, more workers are certain to be displaced, and job creation will become even more challenging. Most economists dismiss concern that this might lead to long-term structural unemployment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't sound promising. Huh? Yeah, the article goes on, focusing on technology improvements, and states that many jobs are, on some level, essentially routine and repetitive. Mm-hmm. So, the outlook is pretty dark when I read, as more workers are automated out of more employment sectors, there must come a tipping point beyond which the overall economy simply is not sufficiently labor-intensive to continue absorbing workers who lose their jobs due to automation or globalization. Beyond this point, businesses will be able to ramp up production primarily by employing machines and software. Structural unemployment will become inevitable. Reading this again, structural unemployment will become inevitable. Is that so? But what will we do then? How should most of us earn their money? I'm sure we can discuss this topic from many different angles, and please do so. Send me your comments to this topic to comment@geography.com and let us dig deeper into the subject. I myself was thinking, if so many people should lose their jobs, will they try to find other opportunities? They will, right? And if it's not with legal labor, then perhaps in the informal sector. You know the term informal sector and its definition, right? If you look at the website of the World Bank Group, you can read the following. The informal sector covers a wide range of labor market activities that combine two groups of different nature. On the one hand, the informal sector is formed by the coping behavior of individuals and families in economic environment where earning opportunities are scarce. On the other hand, the informal sector is a product of rational behavior of entrepreneurs that desire to escape state regulations. Okay. So at least the first part of this description might work for the people losing their regular jobs. But is it really profitable to work in the informal sector? On the webpage of fastcoexist.com, I read this header. There is big money in the underground economy. Really? That sounds interesting, doesn't it? In the article it says it's the second largest economy in the world. Within the decade, it may sustain two-thirds of the planet's workers, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, and even rival the United States. But it's not China. It's the bazaars, vendors, and informal markets of the world. This article is mostly about a new book called Stealth of Nations by Robert Neuwirth. And there is an argument I find highly interesting. Neuwirth argues the world's governments should embrace informal and mostly legal markets as an alternative form of economic organization. That's not just because they improve the lives of millions of entrepreneurs and their customers, creating upward mobility in otherwise dysfunctional systems, but because we have no choice. Either we cooperate with the off-the-books economic activity exploding in the developing world, or we clash counterproductively with them at every turn. Now, there are some statements here that we can discuss from a geographical point of view. What about embracing informal markets? Do you think this is right? Do we really have to do that and have no other choice than to deal with it? Yeah, you know what is one of the main aspects of the informal sector? That there are no taxes paid to the government, right? So why should this be embraced by the government? And the article says, for many countries, off the books, globalization is already the reality. What does the informal sector has to do with globalization? Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it does not has something to do with globalization. I'm asking you. I would really like to hear your opinion on the topic. Yeah? And what we can do to get a quick result on this is do a quick vote. The quick vote of Geography Frontline episode 109. Embracing informal markets. Answer A. We have no other choice. Answer B. Sounds like a good idea. C. It does not really matter. D. We should fight it. Or E. Another opinion. So, go to the webpage of this week's episode on geography.com and click on the answer you think nails it best. If you have another opinion, feel free to just vote for answer E, another opinion, and add a comment in the related section. But I'm sure that there can be said much more about the topic of the informal sector. Perhaps you have some good first-hand examples, or you already did some research on it. Send me your comments via email or drop me a voicemail. You know, Skype name is Geography, pretty easy to remember. And and then we can go on discuss this topic in 110 or whenever. What's that sound? Here comes a section of the show that tries to enhance our auditive awareness. Each episode, you get a sound sample from me, and you should try to guess what sound that is. Yeah, last time we listened to the following sound. And you know what? Once again, no one sent in an audio or written comment about it. So let's just unravel this sound riddle. This is a wooden quay on the River Tejo in Lisbon. You can hear the waves crashing on the quay wall and the quay itself when the water lifts it. So, yeah, that's that. And so there's a new sound for episode 109, and it sounds like this. Did you get it? Let me play it again. So, if you have a suggestion what this is or could be, send it to me via email or voicemail. Last episode, we've discussed the importance of bikeways in an urban environment, remember? And we did a quick vote on the question, new bikeways in the city. And here are the answers. 33% of the frontliners decided to vote for answer A. Bikeways in the city makes sense on its own. So a third of you is thinking that the concept of bikeways works on its own and has not necessarily be part of a whole restructuring of the city. But that bikeways have to be understood as part of a citywide reorganization. This was answer C. Was the answer with the most votes? 67% of the frontliners chose it and think that bikeways won't do any good without being embedded into a larger restructuring of the urban environment. Interesting. Mm-hmm. There were no votes for the other answers, so this is how the Frontline community has voted. And if you want to send in more input about urban bikeways, please go ahead, do that. Yeah, topic isn't closed. One of the great things about Geography Frontline is that discussions don't have to end. We can easily revitalize them in upcoming episodes. Just like we did last week with the Desertec solar power project, remember? And if you're falling behind listening to the latest episodes in the release week, never mind. Just send your comments via email or voicemail a little later. That really doesn't matter. Every feedback is highly appreciated, believe me. Because not talking about a certain topic, by the way, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist anymore, right? You can find geographical content all over the daily news. Just like the article in today's Daily Texan, where the mayor of Austin, Lee Leffingwell, talks about the Lance Armstrong Bikeway, a safe bikeable route through Austin. And he says, the bikeway and our bike-friendly community brings people from all around the world to Austin. We are proud of our biking community, and this bikeway will help guide people through our community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much about standalone impact of bikeways in cities. And we haven't started yet looking into the economic aspect of bikeways. If I look at the numbers of the Lance Armstrong bikeway, that's a $500,000 project. Wow. Amazing. So, before we continue with our next topics, let's listen to some music, huh? We've talked about underground economy. So, this is Monk with the song Dirty Work from his album Modest Among the Living. This is Monk from the album Modest Among the Living with his song Dirty Work from the Podsafe Music Network. You find that on music.mevio.com. The links to the album, both for US and German iTunes Store, are, as always, in the show notes. And it's time again for a quick view into the topics posted on our Facebook wall. We look into it on Frontline on Facebook. Huck has posted a link to a video from the German television ARD, It's an almost 7-minute piece on the Spanish city Valdeluz. He comments on it and says, okay, this report, it's German, but might be interesting as well. Well, yeah, it is interesting, but what good is it if not all frontliners can watch it? Hey, Huck. Besides the point that we should really start using all English content, the problem with video from national television often is that it can only be accessed within the country if you have an IP address of the related country. Not in this case, but please, frontliners, keep that in mind. Yeah, if you talk about it and post that link, it might be useful to just say what it's about and what your comments and thoughts are on it. And to Huck and all the others that find something interesting in another language, just do a Google search on the topic. Let me just do this for now. What's the city called? Let me see. It's Valdeluz. Valdeluz. I'm tapping in. Google Valdeluz. One word and then Spain. Okay. Sometimes it's really simple. Hey, first hit, Deutsche Welle, online. Spain, a shadow over Ciudad Valdeluz. Okay. Let's go on reading. Let's see what they have to say about Valdeluz so that all of you get an idea what Huck is talking about and if it's interesting, as Huck wrote. Ciudad Valdeluz was an ambitious urban development project built to accommodate 30,000 people. Wow, just 70 kilometers from Madrid, with a station for high-speed trains. Then came the global economic crisis and nobody needed the new city anymore. Now Ciudad Valdeluz is a ghost town with only a few residents, though it does have a high-speed railway connection. Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Good catch, Huck. Absolutely. So now, frontliners, tell me, what is so geographical about this piece of information? Is it geographical because it's just about a city? What is it? Dig a little deeper, if you like, or come up with your own new topics. And whenever you want to, post them on Frontline on Facebook. Alexander von Humboldt is on his way to the Americas, remember? He embarked a ship in 1799 from Spain and is on his way over the Atlantic Ocean towards the Canary Islands. And what he describes can be of use for our today's understanding of geography, and it can be inspiring to go on field trips, excursions, and do empirical research in the field. Let's hear what he notes today. And I'm just getting my iPad here and reading from it. Just help in. The Pizarro, that's the ship on which he is. He's sailing to the New World. The Pizarro set sail at 2 in the afternoon. As the long and narrow passage by which a ship sails from the port of Corona opens towards the north and the wind was contrary, we made 8 short tracks, tacks, 3 of which were useless. A fresh tack was made, but very slowly, and we were for some moments in danger at the foot of Fort St. Amaro, the current having driven us very near the rock on which the sea breaks with considerable violence. We remained with our eyes fixed on the castle of San Antonio, where the unfortunate Malaspina was then a captive in a state prison. On the point of leaving Europe to visit the countries which this illustrious traveler had visited with so much advantage, I could have wished to have fixed my thoughts on some objects less affecting. So he's on his way. I'm skipping a few pages here because he's talking about... he's mostly talking about the Gulf Stream and the water movements and the weather for 10 pages. And about that Gulf Stream, he summons it up and says, in reflecting on the causes of the Atlantic currents, we find that they are much more numerous than is generally believed, for the waters of the sea may be put in motion by an external impulse, by difference of heat and saltness, by the periodical melting of the polar ice, or by the inequality of evaporation in different latitudes. Sometimes several of these causes concur to one at the same effect, and sometimes they produce several contrary effects. Yeah, interesting. Do you all know about the Atlantic currents? How they work? Always a nice question in oral exams in physical geography, by the way. Just saying. That's interesting. So skipping. When we were between the islands of Madeira and the coast of Africa, we had slight breezes and dead calms, very favorable for the magnetic observations which occupied me during this passage. We were never weary of admiring the beauty of the nights. Nothing can be compared to the transparency and serenity of an African sky. Wow, sounds nice, huh? And then in the end, as a teaser for next week, the Pizarro had orders to touch the Isle of Lanzarote, one of the seven great Canary Islands, and at 5 in the afternoon of the 16th of June, that island appeared. You see, he's on his way, thinking mostly today about physical geography. And if you still don't know what about these currents in the Atlantic Ocean, just go ahead and Google that, or take out your textbooks and read again what this is all about. Can be useful sometimes. So, this week's announcements are not about upcoming conferences or congresses. This week, it's all about Frontline itself. I spent some time last week to take a closer look at the statistics of the show. As it's running for over 3 years now, there's quite a lot of data to analyze, believe me. But that it is a good thing to produce Frontline on a regular basis, meaning every Monday, every week, that's a no-brainer. If we get into this routine again after a longer break during the last month, then the number of listeners will rise constantly. But the real big deal isn't the constant rise. We have to take it to the next level with a real takeoff in subscribers, yeah, not with a constant rise. I don't know how many of you have subscribed to the podcast anyway, but in case you haven't, this is by far the easiest way to get your hands on the latest episodes of Geography Frontline. Every time you open a feed reader like iTunes, it checks for new releases of the podcast and downloads them automatically. You don't have to do anything. So you'll never miss an episode again. And if many frontliners have this easy kind of access to the podcast, we'll have a higher number of regular listeners, I'm sure. I really believe that. So, subscription is one thing I would really recommend if you haven't already done that. And the other thing is, we need to get even more people hooked on the show. While Frontline was still produced in German, we established a pretty good network all over Germany. And this worked mostly because of you, Frontliners. Yeah, you can easily get the word out way easier than I could do that myself. And you should do it again, that there is a new English-speaking geographical podcast around. As far as I see it, there is no common network of geographers or geography students in the US, right? There is no website where you all go if you study or teach geography in the States. Oh, am I wrong? I might be wrong, so please let me know. So, to reach every faculty, I would have to write some emails. But instead of advertising the show, I think it would be way cooler to do this bottom-up, meaning you can tell your friends and faculty about Frontline. And to make it really easy for you to do so, I prepared some posters and flyers over the last days for you. So let me tell you what I was thinking about. Go to this week's episode's website, or simply go to geography.com/promo. And there you will find three different documents free to download. The poster comes in two formats. One is called Frontline Poster A4, and the other Frontline Poster US Letter, and that's the sizes. It would be amazing if you would print one of them out and put it up in a great spot where many potential listeners can see it. Yeah, just choose whatever format is right for your printer, so US Letter or A4, whatever you want. So, and the third document is the Frontline Flyer. And this is designed in 4 to 6 inches. That is 10 to 15 centimeters in 300 dpi quality. The good thing about this is, and we've done that about a year ago in Germany, and that worked great. The good thing is that you don't have to print some 100 flyers, which probably is way too expensive. There are other options. Many websites where you can order prints of your photos offer first-time customers some free prints. If you load up the Frontline Flyer to such a page, you get some 50, 70 or 100 flyers for free. Yeah, or just a small amount of shipping costs, like $1 or $2 or $3 or so. And the quality is stunning for flyer. It's perfect. Yeah? Got that great photo paper. Great. Amazing. I will put some links to photo services in the show notes that offer such free photos. And it would be really amazing if you would check them out. Yeah, these web pages, or do a little search yourself and order some Frontline flyers. And for the fun of it, we could all post a picture of where we put the posters and flyers to the Facebook page. That would be really amazing. I think that taking some action now is really important. You might know that only about 1% of podcast listeners actually send in comments and actively help to produce the show. So if we could get 1,000 frontliners more to listen to the show, only about 10 would produce content. So you see, there have to be a lot of flyers and posters to be put up and a lot of promotion to be done to raise people's awareness of Geography Frontline. But no doubt, it's worth it. With Frontline, we can create our own network and really interconnect. I want to hear lots of stories in the next weeks of you getting the word out. So, this is it for today's show. Episode 109er comes to an end. Aside printing posters and ordering flyers, don't forget to keep your eyes open about everything that sounds interesting from a geographical point of view. So, frontliners, talk to you soon, and say it with me, guys. The network is us.